ありがとうございます。おはようございます、皆さん。How are you doing? How was your lunch? Did you have a good lunch? Bento? Yes, so I want this presentation to be a little bit interactive. So if you have any questions, don't hesitate to raise your hand and wait for maybe Ziv to... if someone has any questions. I want it to be and feel a little interactive and talk a little bit about what I do, what I see, where the market is heading, and some real life examples from my work and for people and friends around me in Tokyo and Japan and what kind of work they're doing. So, Akiyas, abandoned vacant homes in Japan. And I have a lot of them in my neighborhood where I live in central Tokyo in Setagaya.
I thought about the idea because I also do social media, as many of you might know. What if you see an abandoned house and you squat it? You take possession over this abandoned house. It's just a hypothetical idea. How long time will it take until it's legally yours? What do you think? Don't spoil. So I turn these abandoned Japanese houses into Japandi houses, which is a mix between Japanese and Scandinavian design. So we buy the houses that no one really wants in fantastic locations with some design elements that are often overlooked in the Japanese market, but that I see a lot of potential in. And many Japanese buyers, they don't. The Akiya market is a fairly big market in the Japanese industry, but it's just that many of these people in the market, they don't speak English. So all this content doesn't reach to an English speaking audience. There are fantastic groups of people, Angura Minzoku, if you speak Japanese, maybe you've encountered their content. There's Yamori. There's a few of these groups of people buying old Akiyas and renovating them. What we do, we turn these Akiyas into Japandi houses, which is a short-term rental side. Sangenja House, Sangenja Villa, Sangenja Museum, it's three houses right next to each other. And we also have Wakabayashi Park House and Nakano House. And I've also helped out many other people design and renovate and source Akiyas. So the Akiya problem in Japan, why do it exist? And what are the red flags? And why do Japanese people hate Akiyas? So, Japan, as you know, it has a declining population and people love brand new houses. Old houses built before 1983 is considered more or less worthless in many Japanese people's eyes. But the amount of Akiyas, vacant homes, are growing quite rapidly, and many Japanese investors and people see this as a big opportunity to snatch up a cheap holiday home as an investment, or just to buy a house that's an eyesore in their area. Because Akiyas, they come with fire hazards, and they make the area look bad in many, many ways. So people don't want to live close to an Akiya. It's electrical issues and whatnot. So people don't want to live close to Akiyas. And this is not only in the countryside. While most of these 10 million, almost 10 million vacant homes are in the countryside, there are many hundreds of thousands of them in Tokyo and big cities as well. So inheritance issues is one big thing. Who owns the Akiya? Who owns the land? Who owns the house? Like, there are many complicated things when it comes to older houses that no one really wants. And the real estate agents, they don't really make a profit out of selling a cheap house compared to a house for $500 or $1,000. No one wants to spend the time into selling these houses. So I think if you follow the money, you're not going to end up with an Akiya. This is something, if you were here yesterday, you saw maybe Chai Kanda, who is operating in Kyoto. He always tells me, you make the money when you buy. And I think that's very true. Like, you spot an opportunity that no one really sees. and you buy it and you hold on to it, or you add value to it, or you sell it, but you make the most money when you buy. I don't know if you're following my social media and watching my long YouTube videos, but I stepped on a project last year that I saw an immense opportunity in, Chiba Farmhouse. It was a house that had 2,500 square meters of land. Huge. Most Akyas has 60, 70, 80, 90 square meters of land only, but this one had a... how many tsubo is that? 700 tsubo. Almost 2,500 square meters with a big house. And I had this dream of turning this old house into, yeah, a farmhouse. But it was too big of a project. But I spent a few months renovating this house, cleaning it all out. All the previous owner's belongings were there. I made a little bit of money selling Pokemon cards and other kimonos and things that were inside. But it's a huge job, like cleaning out things, and that's not really where I want to spend my time and money and my friend's time either, like cleaning an old house out like this. But we made a little bit of money, and then I got too busy in Tokyo with other kinds of work. Oh, hello. But the land was huge, and a developer wants to buy it now. So we're actually going to make money by just selling it as is. And I think it's not because I added any value, it's just because I spotted the opportunity when it was there, right in front of me. And I've toured 400 or 500 different Akyas, and the more experience you get, the more you know what's actually available on the market, and the better... oh. Is this one, HDMI. And the better decisions you can make for yourself. But this apartment here is a trial project that I made together with a Japanese company that renovates 400 units a year in Tokyo. We're calling it the Japandi Home, and it was very similar there. They knew people who were kind of offloading old apartments in a great location, and we saw an opportunity that we could create something really nice here. So you make the money when you buy, rather than just designing it into something really nice. That's my belief, at least. Thank you, Chai, for that. So in order to make the money when you buy, you need to kind of understand the culture of real estate here, the seller's mindset, and also the buyer's mindset. I'm not a broker. I come from like a private investors and a DIY kind of background. I like to create cool and beautiful homes, and I like to see opportunity and opportunities in things that people and other people don't see opportunities in. And in this case, we're in Japan. I love living here. I moved here. I came here, and I was fortunate to only work a job that made me work 2 or 3 days a week. And the other days, I could do DIY and create value in like older units and older houses and apartments. But we are in Japan, and 99% of the sellers of these units, these Akyas, these old apartments, they're going to be Japanese. And Japanese culture, people don't value old things, especially when it comes to real estate. So you gotta kind of think and learn how the market and how the Japanese mindset works when it comes to real estate. So these old houses, especially the cheap ones, they're not an asset to most people. They're a problem. And if you can make it easy for the seller to sell it to you, you want to create value, you want to have a vacation house, you want to do something good for the area. Like, I don't know what your intentions are, but if you make that clear and you can offload that problem with the buyer's mindset, you got to be patient, you got to be respectful, you got to be persistent, and you got to know what you look for. So if you're looking for an apartment, but a house comes your way, maybe that's not the right thing. But if you have a clear idea and a clear mind of what you want to do, I think with persistence and with respect and with like knowing what the seller and how the seller thinks, a lot of opportunities is going to show up right in front of you. And it's worked fantastic for me, and it's worked very well for a lot of people and a lot of friends in my surroundings. So there's no real template. Sorry about that, in doing this. But I think it's all about persistence and respect and understanding what the seller thinks. And in my case, we turn these akyas into short-term rentals. So when you purchase one, you got to have the final customer in mind. Is it going to be a domestic person or a domestic family staying here? Or is it going to be an international client? We spent about 1 year into turning Sanginja House into a short-term rental. It's been highly profitable. And yeah, I had my own family and myself in mind when creating this. So a very Swedish and Scandinavian design, but it's still a Japanese house. And we want to keep as much of these old details as possible. As you can see, we kept the original beams and we just added new earthquake proofing, a lot of wood. And on the second floor, we kept all the tatami rooms, the Fusuma doors, the shoji screens. So use what you have in front of you. And this is an international client. We do have occasionally Japanese families coming to stay as well, but it's mostly an international family coming to Japan to enjoy, have a local, authentic experience. Design-driven family is what I have in mind creating here. Very similar to my family back home in Sweden. So my design ethos and my design mindset is a fusion of Japanese tradition and Scandinavian functionality. Many older Japanese houses have many small rooms, usually 6jo, 4.5jo, maybe sometimes 9jo. It's the size of the tatami mats. And we usually open these spaces up and make them more open, then make them more airy. Sunlight is a big thing for me. I love how we've developed this, Ziv. Look at the place we're in right now. Give Ziv a small applaud, I think. But despite saying that, I want you to think of how your eyes and how your body feels after a full day of being in here. No natural sunlight and no, yeah, like being outside and like just being out in sunlight for a full day, you're going to feel energized. And that's something we always look for in our homes and in our houses. And that's not something that you usually pay extra for. It usually just shows up. And you can never tell on a listing if it's south facing with good sunlight or north facing with bad sunlight. You usually have to feel it when you're visiting the house. Storytelling. We're utilizing social media and media, and we're just taking what's already there in front of us. It's tatami rooms, it's shoji doors, it's fusumas. And we have a foreign family in mind when we're creating this. It's pretty funny because I do a lot of media in Japanese too. And the Japanese mindset is really like, oh, it's so boring. Look at these tatami rooms. But the foreigners are usually worshipping the Japanese part of culture. So I get the many, many foreigners are, why are you destroying a Japanese house with Scandinavian aesthetics? And then the foreigners are, and then the Japanese are like very appreciative and really enjoy what we're doing. Sorry about that. Maybe I talk too much. Let me know if you need some more high energy and I'll dance up here for you guys. Creative reuse of materials. We visited Gifu, a few factories and tile manufacturers in Japan. We've visited how they're like the how they're making the old traditional Engawa doors in glass. They're not really made anymore, but all of these old traditional crafts are kind of dying in Japan, and we're trying to like revive these and show them off as much as possible on our social media and integrate them in our builds. So all of our tiles are coming from Gifu Prefecture. We're using our and working together with our local tatami artisans. And basically, as you see here, sunlight, a lot of Japanese traditional aspects, and then tiles. And this is the Toritsu Daigaku apartment that we renovated. Key renovation mistakes to avoid. Maybe Tracy has talked about it. Maybe Blanca. Like it's all, if you're overbuilding and put too much money into renovation, it's not going to yield any money. But if you're going to use it, it might have a lot of value anyway. So it all depends on the final usage and who is going to utilize the space? If you are solely looking for monetary profits, maybe it's better to buy a cheap house, put cheap renovation in, and just rent it out as a short-term rental. Or maybe you want to create a masterpiece, and then you spend more, but you can charge more. Or if you just want a better quality of life, then maybe it's worth spending more for you to feel good and, I don't know, enjoy your morning coffee in a place with a lot of good sunlight and a lot of nice natural materials. But in order to renovate in Japan, I believe that number three here, overlooking neighbors. You got to work with the community. You got to work with the people around you, the people who's been around in that area for a very long time. They'll know the electricians. They'll know the plumbers. They'll know the builders. They'll know everyone around there. And one bad neighbor can make this entire project very, very sour for you. The trash disposal, labor shortage, language barrier, and cultural clashes, they're all things that I've struggled a lot with over the years, especially the labor shortage one. Japan has a declining population. A lot of problems comes with that. If you walk into a konbini in Japan, convenience stores, the workers there, when I came to Japan 7 years ago, most of them were Japanese. They're not Japanese anymore. So these kind of high demand jobs, that makes sense, is not done by Japanese people anymore. They're Vietnamese, they're Nepalese, Indian, Chinese, especially like in my area, there's no Japanese person working in the convenience stores anymore. So builders and laborers, people who can actually pull off the renovation for you, they're in high demand, very high demand, as well as construction is getting more and more expensive. New builds, renovations, everything is getting really expensive. And social order means more than monetary gain in many cases, especially if you're new to the area. If you come there and you want to make good things, that's great. People are going to appreciate it, but it won't happen overnight. It happens slowly. You get into the community, you get to know people, you come with gifts. People come with gifts back, and like slowly and steady, you've established yourself and you give and you take, and you give and you take. And the more you do that, and the longer amount of time you do that, the more opportunities will arise. Cultural clashes and language barriers are obviously like fantastic steps to get there. And if you don't speak Japanese, it might be harder. So learn your Japanese, as Nick said an hour ago. We're using storytelling, but it's really not that hard. We're using Japanese materials in most of the, like in all of our builds, Gifu, Tatami, Shoji, Fusuma, we're reusing a lot of things. And the reason why I'm saying this is that online, I haven't really talked about it, but this, Sanginjaya Villa, is my first Akiya I purchased in 2020. Initially, I thought real estate in Japan was very cheap and I could purchase my first unit close to Shibuya for $90,000 after living here for less than a year, renovated it, and then I put that in as a collateral to buy this house. And this is after renovation, because I put about 2 million yen into renovation, and then I lived here together with my girlfriend for about 5 years. This is right when we moved out, and these are things that are kind of left over. Don't care too much about it, but this is the after we renovated and lived here for about 5 years. And this is now. So we spent about a year renovating it. Local tatami guy, Namigai-san, made the tatami mats. We're using Ajiro Tenjo that they're using in Japanese temples. So we have a very particular taste when it comes to many design aspects. The things that are very fun and very time consuming to create, but it also puts you in a different bracket because no one else does this. Renovations when it comes to short-term rentals in Japan are usually in my area on the cheaper end. People, if you put in the extra work, I think you'll get the money back, like that I'm 100% sure of. But this was the first house in that area, in Sangenjaya, 10 minutes from Shibuya. I know my neighbors. I fixed the water leaks. I helped the Yakult lady when her bike falls over. And I purchased 3 more houses on that street over the course of 5 years. It's because I'm inside the community. People know me. Someone passes away and they don't know what to do with their house. So they come to you first of all. So many of these houses are off-market listings, but you just got to start somewhere, come with good intentions, be inside of the community, and then opportunities will arise. I invite my neighbors in here and they're super happy about the foreign Scandinavian aspects. They're not super happy about the Japanese. They don't really care so much, but all the wood and all the sunlight that you utilize and all these small design elements, they're very happy about it. And because of that, a lot of opportunities arise around us. That's a fact. So the first house was bought for 21.7 million yen. And have in mind that this was 2020. So the market has changed a lot. And in 2020, most of the people and most of my friends around me said that the market has been stagnant forever. It's never going to go up. You're never going to make money in real estate. And that was kind of the word in even before 2020, even before when I bought the first unit as well. But I've lived in London, I've lived in New York, I've lived in Paris, I've lived in Stockholm. And for 21.7 million yen, what is that in dollars? It's $150,000. I could barely buy a parking lot in Stockholm for that money. So to me, that was cheap. It was a really rundown house, but 21.7 down from 27 million. So they gave me about a 20-30% discount because no one wanted the house. It was on the market for about a year. Spent 2 million yen renovating it. We lived there for 5 years. We didn't pay any rent. It was a full loan from a Japanese bank. The mortgage was about 100,000 yen a month at a pretty high interest rate. We moved out. The pillars and posts were literally dangling around. Like, it was probably a hazard to live there, but we lived there for 5 years. We moved out and we spent 40 million yen on renovation. So all in all, 23.7, 27.7, 37.7 million yen in acquisition and renovation. And then all the mortgage that we paid off to the bank during the time. And this place, we're now renting it out for about 70,000 yen per night. And we have about...
So was that 70?
70 on average, which is about 2 million yen a month. And then we have, expenses and stuff too. But that's almost a 50% return. I would guess, I don't know what the house like this would cost now, but I would guess maybe 35, 40. But I don't really know. But it still gives a really good return. And has the market changed since 2020? I totally believe so. It's changed a lot, especially when it comes to cheaper properties, because the building cost has gone up so much. The tourism is booming. It's 60 million people is going to visit Japan in, what is it, Tracy, 2030?
Yeah, 60, 2030, yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, I know Ziv talks a lot about this on his LinkedIn. There's a lot of backlash against foreigners, not only streamers, not only tourists, but also people living here. And we have a new LDP potential female prime minister who's done some pretty right-wing remarks, I think. So, and also they changed the business manager visa requirements, as Nick talked about earlier today. So there's a lot of uncertainties, but the market has changed a lot in Tokyo where we operate. And cheaper houses snaps up pretty expensive. And houses that they were called, when I bought this house, they were called gumi houses. So people talk, this, it basically means trash house. No one wants this house. It's a cheap house. It's non-rebuildable. No one wants these houses. But now everybody wants them because the gains are really high. And people, if you go to a Japanese home center, from the change from 2020 to 2025, the kind of materials that they carry has gone from more kind of Daiso, 100 yen shop, 100 yen stores into more like pro high quality building stores. So it's non-comparable to US or Europe by any means, but it's still going in that renovation direction. And it just shows that people are starting to aim and looking at renovation more and more. And not only rebuilding and brand new builds are on the map anymore. People are actually seeing this as a big business. There is one company called Kachitasu. I don't know if you've heard about it. The CEO's name is Arai-san. And Kachitasu, they buy Akias all over Japan. Can you guess how many Akias they're buying and renovating and selling a year? They're buying, renovating, and selling 6,000 Akias a year, which is 20 houses a day. And if I see my comments on my social media, and people think that Akia is a kind of unexplored market, but it's not. It's just that the content doesn't really reach an English-speaking audience. With that said, there are 10 million of them, and you can easily create your own market in this. It's so many vacant houses and a declining population. So even though they're probably expanding and buying up a lot more houses, like, there's still a really big market.
Thank you, Anton. I was curious about, like, since 2020 until now, 2025, and in the future as well, how do you see the regulations about, like, renovation? Have it increased a lot since you started? Do you think it's going to get worse? How do you think it's going to get more, if it's going to get more complicated towards the future? Or, you know, what's your perspective on that?
Very good question. So I know that that's a big part of Blanca's presentation, renovation expertise. But for two-story buildings and buildings bigger than 200 square meters, starting from 1st of April this year, it's definitely gotten more strict. But at the same time, they have this big problem with these vacant homes, these vacant houses. So if you would ask, you probably need to ask a lot of people. No one in the municipality space and the city halls, they don't want to give you a straight answer. But it's a gray zone. It really is. You need to file for permits, but many of these old houses, they're not up to date. And many architects, many builders, many engineers, they don't want to touch these houses, and you can't really get them up to code as well. So we haven't gotten permissions before renovation on some of the properties. We ask around, and the pros, someone like Blanca or your local builder, they might do the renovations and then afterwards they file for permits. So that's something I've seen a lot of people doing, even for bigger, newer builds as well. And for if you've seen the waterfall house that I'm building right now in the countryside, that house on paper does not exist. You know what that means? That in the 80s, this very wealthy Japanese businessman, he built a house and never registered it. So it's not a new thing to not apply for permits. It's something that's been happening in Japanese society for a long time. People build houses and then they never file for permits. And that, in a country where I'm from, Sweden, that's unheard of. Like, if people would build a house that's 10 square meters and it's too close to the neighbor's garden or too close to the neighbor's piece of land, someone would report you. And they would do that right away. So it's all very gray. I think it's case by case. I would
if you want to do a rental, for example, like, within that complicated things?
Not really. I don't think it really matters, because the building division and the permits and long-term rental and short-term rentals and ryokan, they're not like connected really. So it's all about the tohon and how it's registered really. Obviously, I want to follow the laws. I want you all to follow the laws and be good citizens or do things the right way. But sometimes there are no right way, and sometimes you don't get a straight answer. So you kind of have to do your own research case by case. That's why there's no way to put a template on Akias and Akia Investments and build a big business around this. There are many people in the Japanese sector who does long-term rentals as well. And it's really a gray market. It's really a gray area. And that's also why many real estate agents don't want to touch this as well. It's easier to sell a tower mansion in Poyosu, done and done, than dealing with 200 gray areas for a renovation of a house that costs $500. So this is a trial project I did with one other Japanese company called Zero Renovation. So we bought an old undervalued unit in Toritsu Daigaku in Meguro, and we designed it and we renovated it together. It took about 3 months, very fast. This company does about 400 units a year, and we're putting it out for sale. So if you're looking to buy a unit in central Tokyo, the Japandi Home, a collaboration between Zero Renovation, please let me know. But it's a completely new kind of market. I've never sold anything ever on my real estate, so I don't really know how that works. I'm not a broker, so let's see if this is a functioning market. But with that said, I have a lot of friends in the real estate industry, so a lot of deals come my way. You can buy them cheaply. You add a lot of value by renovating it with design, with sunlight, with natural materials. And I think it's a huge value add, and we designed it for someone like myself. So can you flip homes in Japan? 5 minutes. Can you flip homes in Japan? Emil, can you flip homes in Japan?
Try not to.
Try not to. Why not?
Yeah, the taxation is not favorable individuals.
Anyone else? Can you flip homes in Japan?
I was going to say, taxation is not favorable for individuals versus corporations that do it.
Plus, what does that mean?
If you're a registered, I think when Daigo Sato-san was up earlier talking about tax, when you're a company that does real estate transactions as part of their business, any capital gain is considered business revenue and taxed as business revenue. When you're an individual, any kind of flip is it's a capital gains tax of 40% as opposed to business revenue. So that's just one example of some of the complications.
There are a few rules around that. If it's up to 30 million yen, you can take it. I think you can only take one out of five. One in 5 years, you can take at a lower tax rate. But if you ignore Emil for a while, can you sell a home for profit? That's my real question here. Can you buy it cheap or at a mid price? You add value to it. Can you sell it for more? I think that's the bigger question here, because that hasn't really been a thing in the Japanese market before. It's a huge thing in Sweden. People buy a home and they just expect it to kind of skyrocket in value in 5 years. Buying a home is an investment. That's what we're taught since we're kids, kind of. Oh, you're buying an apartment. It's an investment. People just throw that word out. It's an investment. But that's not how Japan works. You buy a home, and then the moment you bought it, it's a used home. Someone has used your home. And I'm born and grown up in a house that's 120 years old. It's a crazy word, used home to me. But I think you can when the market goes up. And if you buy something undervalued and you add value to it, I think you can actually flip homes. And that's something that I've kind of realized for the past few years. But it's because the market has gone up. Yes, Siv, sorry.
I was going to say, yes, you can definitely flip homes in Japan. But I think the issue is for most of us that we're competing with people like you or with companies that specialize in that and have got the connections and the experience and the know-how to get it done a lot more efficiently than we can. That's why I think a lot of us are not getting into that.
What about bigger buildings? Maybe you have more experience. You buy with owner change and you buy with just as a return?
Depending on location, yes. Some of them have gained in value. And definitely if you've somehow managed to increase the yield. The thing is that with those types of buildings, they're clearly always going to be purchased by investors, not by owners occupiers. No one's going to buy it and live in a tiny little studio unit. So really the investors who are buying it from you are evaluating based on the yield that they can get. So if you've managed to increase the yield, then yes, you can definitely sell it to profit.
And with that said, I think you're all in a very unique position because you speak English. And the value add for you is that you buy a house, you buy a home, you renovate a home, and you're able to find a foreign renter of any kind. Because as a foreigner in Japan, to rent a unit, to rent a house, it's almost impossible. It really is. You gotta put up with reikin, shikikin, key money, all of these fees. And many owners, they don't want to rent to foreigners at all. So that's an easy way to add value to an investment property that Ziv is talking about, for example. What is the future of Akiya in Japan? 22 million vacant homes in about 10 years. It's more and more. And they're all like, after a few years of being in Akiya, they're almost like you can't really save them unless someone is taking care of them. They air them out. If you don't spend time in a house, the house goes bad. That's a fact. And many of these vacant homes, they're apartments built, they're buildings, they're a little bit of, I'm terribly sorry, guys. And while...
Is that into the toilet if you want to measure so?
How do we do that? And I believe that many of these homes are not going to be revived.
We don't,
sorry. So I think... And I see many more people are getting into this industry, this business. And I think that is going to increase. There is going to be more and more older homes that are being revived in Japan. We're looking for location, structural health, market demand. It's kind of the same as location. Renovation cost versus potential revenue, and story and design potential. What was the previous story of this place? And how can you bring that story and that design into the future? This is the most fun part. This is where you can be really creative. What is unique with this place? And how can you bring that story forward? And how can you make that alive again? So I think these are the most important things to me when evaluating a house, and also obviously the price. Japandi Waterfall House, the challenges we had with this one is landlocked. The belongings were left behind. There's no sewage connection. Sorry, Ziv. There's a well water source. It needs testing. It needed a foundation check, and it had a small water leak. And because of this, they just wanted to get rid of it. But these are the challenges, but these are the opportunities. It's next to a waterfall. It's expansive land. It's accessible. And the well is actually spring water. It might be onsen quality water. It has character, a story to bring forward, and it has nature around. And I've seen so many houses, and I just fell in love with it. So while the broker and the seller, they only saw all the problems. But if you can see opportunities within these problems, and you can kind of see through these problems, I think you can make a good deal, and you can make and create something really nice. Japandi houses, we keep expanding. I do a lot of media consulting and education as well. We have the Akiya Masterclass. I've written a best-selling book, Free Houses in Japan. Ashita asa 6:00 ni mo J-Wave Find My Voice to you, ラジオショーにも出演させていただくので。So I do a lot of Japanese media and also foreign media as well, talking about the Akiya problem. And for a foreign audience, I talk about how crazy I think it is. And to a Japanese audience, I talk about basically what I talked about today, how you can actually create value with something that most Japanese people don't see any value in at all. We're also looking for a real estate agent. So if you want to work with us, work at anton.jp. And if you have any questions, please give them to me.
Thank you very much, Anton.
ありがとうございます。
ありがとうございました。 Do we have any hands in the room? We've got a couple of minutes for questions if anyone's got any. Otherwise, yes. Okay, Nick.
Hi, Anton. That was a great presentation. Thank you.
Hello, Nick. Arigato gozaimasu.
So one of the points that I like that you talked about was, you know, getting to know your neighbors and making sure that what you're using the buildings for are going to be accepted by the people around there. I've heard some stories about poor ethics in Akiya acquisition. Can you speak to, in your opinion, what are some good ethics that people should have when they're exploring this market?
So good ethics is communication. I think communication and be curious and ask questions. It really doesn't take much. Just be respectful, ask questions, and I think make it easy for the seller. I think that's something. Like a real estate agent who doesn't make any money on this, doesn't want to spend too much time selling this unless they own the house. Because then they've purchased it really cheap and then they're selling it for 2, 3, 4, 5 million yen. And then they're actually making a pretty good profit. So I think that's a good kind of rule of thumb. If you ask the broker, do you own this house? In most cases, they're going to say no. But I think just make it easy, be respectful, find a win-win. I think that's a good one. I don't know if I answered your question, but...
It's another one.
Win-win, yeah. Yeah, just make it easy for the seller and be communicative. I think that's really what it is. And make sure that they understand what you want as well. I think this is a clear misconception and misunderstanding. I've seen a lot. Like you're asking for something and then the real estate agent provide you with something completely different. And you're like, well, this is not what I asked for. This is not what I want. And then you've got to ask again, but be respectful, be communicative, and you don't have to buy the first house that just comes your way, really. Like just shop around, really. But be respectful of the broker's time as well. I think just normal, common sense, really. And if you don't really understand, ask a question. What do you say, sir?
Sorry, no, I'm just going to say this is really good advice. We actually have somebody who just spoke a bit too abruptly to a broker. That broker not only doesn't work with him, he doesn't accept any more customers from us. It's just
and
basic manners. It's not that hard.
We're all foreigners. And if we're all respectful and if we provide value, like we're all going to look good, really. I think that's a good rule of thumb. You see these tourists in Kyoto or this Spanish dude who broke into a temple on social media last week. It makes tourists look bad, but it also steers this like kind of right-wing movement that's happening in Japan right now. And I don't want to speak about politics, but like if we respect people and everything that's going on around us, people will respect us back. It's just common sense, really.
Well, final question from the stream. Okay, one final question for you. They're asking, number one, how do you source the wood that you use for your floorings and your terraces? I think you spoke about that a little bit last year. And the second one, just curious why you chose at the waterfall house. Why did you choose a cold plunge and not a hot tub?
Maybe I want to have both. Wood, I check Yahoo Auction, Mercari, and usually you can see the seller, what they have in stock. And then you can call the seller up and ask them if they have something that they want to get rid of. Maybe they have people buy too much stock and they want to sell things pretty fast. Lack of space, scarcity. No one has space for literally anything. It's Japan. My pieces of land in Tokyo are like 55, 60 square meters. It's nothing. I know you Americans, you have sheds that are bigger than my piece of land. So like, yeah. And many companies have showroom units, brand new builds. They're getting rid of a lot of the new things that have been... I know Emil bought a vanity unit for 10,000 yen and Blanca is offloading some things from time to time as well. Flooring I bought out in Chiba and a big Soko. big storage. I got about 80% discount on that one. And I've gotten a lot of wood for free previously, and you just recycle it. I bought a big planer, and the planer was about $500, and you just put the wood inside of it and it looks brand new. So there are many creative ways to find good and cheap material, and especially floorboards and things that you need a lot of, you can usually source it very cheap. Yes.
Thank you very much. No, we're going to have to cut it because the next presentation is supposed to start now. But thank you very much, Anton.
Thank you very much for listening. Arigatou gozaimashita.